Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble. Chris Clements is on vacation. But I have a special guest today, my wife, Alyssa Scannell. And, you know, I was just thinking that, look at that, Mrs. Dark Money. Boy, if you're not watching the video, you should guys watch the video. Well, one, because Alyssa's hot, but also because the graphics are great. Mrs. Dark Money. This is the first podcast that I've actually been a little bit nervous about.
Well, I did just give you a list of all the things I do not want to talk about, so I'd imagine you're probably racking your brain for things that are
these are all the things
lit.
I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were having a conversation a couple days ago about, well, I think the way it came up is you took the blame for the state of American politics.
No.
No, you didn't.
I lamented the state of American politics.
But you said something about how you thought it started in 2010.
I think that was a crossroads that certainly took us in a different direction that at the end of the day seems to be not all great. If you remember in 2010, most of the Blue Dog Democrats were not reelected. And that became probably not the beginning of the end, certainly, but a major point in the end of moderates.
Yeah.
And now you look for people that are more centrist, and they are very few and very far between. And you find yourself sometimes, I know your listeners are not going to like this, but thinking, oh, well, at least Nancy Pelosi's there because somebody has a good head on their shoulders. And 10 years ago, 12 years ago, you certainly would not have said that. And I know you're going to get a lot of hate mail for that. And I'm not saying I would vote for her if I lived there. But she is less extreme than some of the options that we have now.
Oh, she has been, I mean, we've used her. I mean, and I should probably do a little bit of context on this, because for people who don't know, Alyssa has been my business partner for many years and was a key architect of the 2010 strategy.
I don't love architect.
Oh, you're
because
not.
That makes me feel like you're calling me Karl Rove.
Karl Rove.
Karl Rove, I am not.
Karl Rove in a dress? No. So you were a key component of the strategy that was employed in the dark money of 2010 that focused on House races, because we had worked together on fighting against the health care bill. And it was, I think, the day the bill passed on reconciliation, you had created a board, and it had all the members that we thought were going to be no votes. We had them in red, and then all the ones we figured would be green, so we had them on the yes side. And there's all these Democrats that we kept hearing over the days that kept moving from no to yes. And we were just like, oh my gosh, these guys really are going to walk the plank. Mm-hmm. They're going to.
Did we do an ad?
We did an ad called Walk the Plank. Yes, we did. Shout out to Nick Ryan, Larry McCarthy. Oh, sorry. And I remember I was so despondent when the bill passed on reconciliation, and you said, well, it's easy. These are the people that we target in the election in November on the healthcare issue. And that began the formation of the strategy. We were the only outside group that focused only on the House races. And Some eventually came that way.
Yeah, I think a lot did.
Oh, but we would, yeah, it was, and there were those were, as you point out, they were a ton of Blue Dog Democrats that all got wiped out. Not all. Andy Barr survived in Kentucky. Kyrsten Sinema survived here in Arizona, and Henry Kuehler in Texas. And there might have been a couple more that survived, but Kuehler's the only one left. I mean, Sinema's now in the Senate, so one Blue Dog got to the Senate, but I think Kuehler's literally the only Blue Dog Democrat in the House of Representatives, which is astounding.
All I can think about is, I'm wondering if you're pronouncing his name incorrectly, but we'll
it's
move on.
C-U-E-L-L-E-R.
Yeah, we can move on. That's not how.
Well, that's so. Just so our listeners know, Alyssa is my. I don't know. I was going to say biggest critic, but you're not. You are, but you're not. But you are the one who can correct me on all of my mispronunciations, because I do a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly. Stage mom, if you will. Mom.
So you view. Yeah, and I guess you're right that I hadn't thought about it in the context of all these Blue Dog Democrats being defeated. The left has only gotten more extreme. The right has definitely gotten more extreme. But I posed the question yesterday to you that I thought was interesting, or maybe it's not interesting, I don't know. But we were deeply involved in the Tea Party movement in 2009 and 2010, attended a number of rallies. We might have organized a few of them. And the question I posed was, do you think that there were Tea Party, or was it the same people who attended Tea Party rallies that were part of the January 6th craziness?
I think, after talking about it with you, my initial reaction was, I think Trump pulled a lot of people from places that previously had not been political. But I also think it's important to note that people that were at Tea Party rallies in 2010 were extremely patriotic and would honor and respect the Capitol building beyond what it means to one man being president, staying president. And I think, I hope that the people that were at Tea Party rallies are not the same people that would break through barriers or be allowed through barriers and then desecrate one of the most beautiful, sacred places for our country's history.
Yeah. No, well,
but I don't know. I don't know anyone that was there.
Right. Yeah. Thankfully. Well, that, actually, you make a very good point, because we hosted a big, huge, like a couple different times, big Tea Party rallies at the Capitol. And nobody went. And this is when Democrats controlled and they were about to, you know, take over government, you know, make a government run health care. It was an existential threat. And none of them went storming into the Capitol.
I don't think it would have occurred to anyone.
Yeah. Huh. Boy. And they were, you're right about the patriotism. I mean, they were true believers in the Constitution, true believers in the institutions of our democracy and republic. Yeah, it wouldn't have even occurred to them. Well put. See, you guys can see why. Married to this wonderful person. What else should we talk about politically or politics? You want to talk about current politics in Arizona?
I can give it a shot.
Well, you are, so a little bit of setup. So Alyssa has been obviously a predominantly lifelong Republican, was very involved in the Republican campaigns, worked for John Shadegg. Worked with me, it has worked with me for years.
There are so many people I hope do not listen to this podcast now
Why?
I feel like you are outing me as a rabid Republican, which is not...
You're not rabid. Not true. I mean, you've always had a little bit of a... I guess I would put you in a strong economic conservative, more social moderate, more social liberal, right?
I am from California.
Yeah, Northern California.
Northern California.
But you are now registered independent.
No party preference.
No party preference. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's pretty much the same here in Arizona. You fit the demographic of what Republicans have lost over the last few years, 2018, 2020, or 2020, for sure. Suburban women, right? You're kind of right in that. You are either, you're not quite Gen X, so you're an elder millennial. Right?
Yeah, I saw a meme the other day about all the things that people within my 5-year range have been called, and Zennials, elder millennials, I think now the geriatric millennials. It's very sad.
And you're pretty young, so to be called geriatric anything is offensive, right? But what's it,
when both of my pregnancies were also geriatric pregnancies,
right? Because so. You were over the age of 35. Ah, that's classic. So how do you view where things are nationally, Arizona, as a targeted suburban woman who both sides need to appeal to?
Yeah, so neither side appeals to me quite yet. Certainly not during primary season, because they are trying to appeal to their base. To the extent I see anything, actually, I'm not, FYI, if you're running a campaign, I don't really get anything. So you might want to talk to your vendor for micro-targeting. But I don't really know too much about what kind of messaging is being used towards no party preference people. But in general, I think the saddest thing, I almost said bummer, but it's more than a bummer, is how tribal politics has become. And I think you can trace it back to plenty of things. I think humans are tribal, and right now the thing that we centralize around for our tribes seems to be politics. In the past, it's certainly been religion. I was just listening to somebody talk the other day about what a big deal it was that JFK was Catholic, and that certainly would not be a big deal today, but at one point your religion was much more major. It was your tribe, and there are certainly pluses and minuses to religion no longer being the thing that we align our tribes, but we are tribal beings. And I think that being tribal around politics is just particularly ugly, but maybe it's not particularly ugly. This is the only tribalism I've experienced as an adult. So It feels really ugly, and it always has.
Yeah, I think it's uglier than it's been in the past. And the thing that's frustrating to me is I feel like as a conservative, a lifelong conservative who, I grew up reading National Review and William F. Buckley and being a huge, I'm a Reagan baby. That's where my touchstone is that the party or the conservative movement and the base of the party is just not recognizable because of the populism that Trump brought to the campaign in 2016 and then how he was president. And I think that's, it's interesting because I had said in the previous podcast, I talked about how the Democrats have lost, they're gaining the highly educated, white, wealthy voters, which typically were Republican for generations, but losing Hispanics, losing the working class. And it's just such an interesting dynamic because as frustrated as I am with what Trump is as a person and as a personality and the personal fealty that people have for him, a lot of the stuff that he was doing as president was appealing to the very people that, as conservatives, we've wanted to appeal to for a long time. But at the expense of educated white voters.
Right. And at the expense of governance, you know, there's a huge difference between campaigning and governing, and people that are pretty good campaigners don't necessarily make great leaders. And I think so many of our leaders today appeal to the worst parts of us as humans. Like, you know, in psychology, there's an idea that we have like an attribution bias. So if you were to encounter somebody today that snapped at you, if you were in a store and somebody snapped at you, you would assume that person, if they're a woman, you'd call them a Karen right away. You would assume they are a bad person who is always doing things like that. That's their personality. But surely we've all snapped at people because we were tired or because we just got really bad news but still had to run into the grocery store and then they were out of something. And in our minds, we attribute it to external circumstances, but when it's somebody else, we attribute it to their internal state. And I think we do that in politics too. I have members of my family who will go unnamed, but when they see somebody that feels differently on an issue, they immediately decide it's because that person wants the end of America. That person is a bad person. That person hates the Constitution. And I'm pretty sure that's not the case in most cases. And, you know, I actually think maybe the last time I was on your podcast, I quoted Michelle Obama, which is weird that I'm going to do it again. But I did hear her speak and she said that it's hard to hate up close.
Yeah.
I think it was probably in relation to her relationship with George W. Bush. But because you know a person is having a bad day, or you know that that person feels X on this issue because their heart's in the right place. They just have a different way to get to the same outcome you want.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what, I mean, that goes to what's really been lost in politics is that we question the other side's intentions. And
we've eliminated nuance.
Yeah.
Eliminated.
That's true. Because as much as I disagree with AOC, I don't think her intentions are to destroy America. I think she wants to have a different kind of America than I do. But I think at the end of the day, she would recognize that she couldn't be who she is anywhere else.
Yeah.
Really.
I'd be interested to talk to somebody like Trump or like AOC or... And I don't really want to talk to them, but or Marjorie Taylor Greene, is that her name? And kind of ask, like, when you say so-and-so is, like, AOC, if you say Charles Koch is evil, like, what do you want his life to look like? Do you want him to be rotting in jail? And I'm not even going to cast judgment on what they would say, but I am interested because I think in some cases... people have stopped looking at humans like humans. I listened to somebody talk about identity politics and how it can be good if you are talking about it in terms of common humanity. But if you are talking about it in terms of common enemies, that wasn't the exact term, but that's when identity politics goes astray.
Yeah.
Great. And maybe people really do want terrible things for people.
That would be sad. But you're right. I think that that's, obviously people get spun up. I mean, the people who are in the Capitol chanting, hang Mike Pence, that's crazy.
Yeah. Do you think? No, I'm not going to.
You're going to ask me if I believed they were chanting it literally?
I mean, I was going to, but then I decided I really you don't want to. Know the answer no, to I don't. I definitely don't.
Well, I mean, maybe this January 6th committee can get to the bottom of that. I don't know.
And I realized I just kind of talked myself in a circle about people's intentions but I do think it's complicated and it's nuanced, and humans are humans no matter what side of the aisle they're on.
Well, and they can be persuaded to do things that, and we've known this from, and just so people know, you have a master's in psychology. So when you talk about psychology, I think you know more than I do, but I can't remember the name of the study that back in the 60s where people were told to basically electrocute someone in the other room, and they were told they needed to do that. And it was this obedience of, oh, I'm being told to do it, even though I can tell that they're just in excruciating pain.
Same as the Stanford prison experiment.
Right. And so I feel like, you know, January 6th is a pretty good example in my mind of people just getting caught up in the fervor and
herd,
like,
mentality.
Oh, go do this, you know?
Yeah. And also the intoxication of feeling anonymous. And it's exactly what goes on social media. Mm. You can say something to somebody, and we've both done it.
Mm-hmm. To each other.
Maybe. But you feel protected and emboldened in a way that you just would not. Most people would not if they were face to face.
Well, and I think that most people wouldn't. And then maybe part of the problem is that people will now be more nasty in person because they've, you know, earned, you know, practiced it anonymously.
You might be right. The first thing that popped into my mind is Will Smith and then Dave Chappelle being attacked on stage. It certainly seems like there might be some creep into real life. I know that's not political, but the idea.
And the attacks that, you know, public figures are now enduring out in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, oh, well, they're public figures. They have no right to privacy if they're going to be in a public. Yeah, but there's just common decency. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't remember hearing before the last 4 years or maybe five of ever having a politician being at a restaurant being shouted at ever.
And it's not just politicians. It's people that are eating at the restaurant that aren't at the protests that are being berated for not saying that they align or joining the protest, and they might very well agree, but they're just hungry. And so I think the idea of silence is violence, or if you're silent, you're complicit on both sides, is so misguided. And again, what's a worse word for bummer? I'm from California, so it sucks, dude.
It sucks, dude. Where does it go from here?
I have no idea. On my best days, I think we can turn it around. You read The Coddling of the American Mind, and it seems like, all right, there are people out there that can really change the way we as a society work together, communicate. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the way things have gone since The Coddling of the American Mind was printed, and it seems like
it's gotten
maybe
worse.
That was just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think is going to happen here in Arizona?
Well, that's a great question. It's going to be... I have optimism. You know that I'm...
Yes.
Optimist. That whether it's Karen Taylor Robeson, who's governor, or Carrie Lake, who's governor, or Katie Hobbs, who's governor, that there will be some, you know, that I think, I would hope it, that there would be some semblance of, you know, decorum. You know, Ducey's done a really good job of just not being inflammatory, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So I think I, you know, definitely Karen Taylor Robeson and Katie Hobbs to some degree, maybe less for Lake. I don't know. It, you know, I don't know whether she's going to, if she wins the primary, whether she changes, you know, the way that her rhetoric is.
I assume she'd have to, but I'm,
yeah,
I don't know, but we're so lucky here to have, in my opinion, I do not speak for my husband, but he might agree with me. We're so lucky to have someone like Kyrsten Sinema, who I think is a representative. I know she's a senator, but in the truest sense of the word, she represents the people that elected her and the people that didn't elect her. More importantly, the people that didn't vote for her.
Yeah.
And I know that that causes a lot of, well, it sparks a lot of protests outside her office. And I think that is so sad when you find somebody who's even approaching moderate that gets protested, but.
Yeah. Good point. I think nationally, you know, as we look at 2024, my hope is that DeSantis just becomes a juggernaut and it becomes a one-to-one DeSantis versus Trump and DeSantis overcomes. I mean, the problem is if DeSantis is, if it's more than a one-on-one contest, Trump probably wins if he wins the primary.
Well, doesn't it depend on who is his opponent?
Well, yeah. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. If it's DeSantis and Pence and, you know, Haley and both Nikki Haley and who am I thinking of, the senator? Oh my gosh!
I know. I'm spacing.
He was just doing this questioning in the Senate committee the other day.
Like Hawley?
Hawley, yeah, Josh Hawley, or Tom Cotton.
I thought you were talking about a woman.
Or Kristi Noem, or, you know, you name them,
or if by some miracle you are listening, Paul Ryan, please come back, please.
So I will say that both Alyssa and I are huge Paul Ryan fans, in part because we know him personally, he's just a genuinely...
First name drop, that's pretty good.
Come on. I mean, we were staffers together. But he's just a genuinely nice guy who did this, got into politics for the right reasons, and got out of politics for the right reason.
Yeah, and he believed in nuance. He was intelligent and thoughtful, and... he was kind to his staff, which, you know, your subscriber only content will be the members that were not kind to their staff, right? But I don't think that's going to happen. I think he has a good gig now, but.
Yeah. Boy, he'd be great. But he's young enough to still have a political future.
Talk about optimistic.
Yeah. God, the base hates him. It's so mystifying to me. He was probably the most conservative speaker we've ever had. And yet he was reviled by the Trumpies.
My knowledge of the history of the speakership is really limited, so I will take your word for it.
But well, it was more conservative than Gingrich, because Gingrich mm-hmm. was, just, you know, sold out.
But talk about tribalism. Talk about somebody that...
Yeah.
Throws bombs, right?
Good point. Good point. Well, this has been illuminating. I hope so.
Really?
For our listeners.
Okay. Yeah, it has. I hope so.
I mean, it's fun to just chat about this stuff. We don't get a chance to chat politics as often as people might think we do because we've got the kids and busy.
And I end up getting mad, usually.
Yeah, you've been
about
very
something.
Calm.
And not at you necessarily,
just mad in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's word
sad.
Of the day. It's a bummer.
It's a bummer. It's a sad commentary on the state of affairs and politics, that there's so much divisiveness and revileness. Is that a word?
I don't
probably
think so.
Not. Here we go. Well, thank you for taking some time out of your day away from Vin to to be here.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to take a break from teaching a 14-month-old animal sound.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great one.